Witches, Season 1, Episode 3. Second line is over, but we're just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. My name is Grace. Of course, I'm not alone. I'm joined by the wonderful DM Philly. Philly, how you doing?
So good. I just wandered over with the unusual funeral procession, Grace.
With dancing skeletons?
Yeah, there was a couple of people with big bobblehead helmets on. It was really a lot of fun. I was flirting with a random stranger that wandered up in the midst, as you do. But yeah, it was a good jaunt over.
Now is time to dance. As we do in New Orleans. So episode 3, we get the fallout from Deirdre's death. We do get a flashback at the beginning of the episode back to 1600 Scotland. I have a theory about what that might be about, where that's leading. We get Cyprian and Rowan trying to, you know, they're hanging out together, Cyprian doing more detective work, and Rowan sort of delving into the world of New Orleans. I thought also we got a bit more this episode about Carlotta and maybe even Cortland, that we can continue to sort of speculate as to what their motives are. But what do you think of episode 3? And actually, before you do, I'll just remind folks to please subscribe, rate and review, posturecaps.com/witches. But what do you think of Second Line, Rich?
Ups and downs, Grace. I feel like we're like tracking some consistency week to week, at least from my experience with Mayfair Witches. I think that some of it is really interesting. I think I'm more eager to see what they're going to do every week with each episode. But then I come in and I feel a little maybe unsatisfied, like I'm about to get a whole meal, but they're only maybe giving me an appetizer. I don't know if that tracks at all.
Yeah.
But there was some interesting stuff going on in episode 3. I'm really dialed in on the Cyprian Grieve Talamasca storyline. I like the investigative kind of thing that's happening there. I like the allusions to the kind of grander network. The Lasher stuff is like just problematic enough that I don't know how to feel about it, Grace.
Well, one thing I realized as I was watching this episode, that please, for the love of God, Lasher cannot be the man who impregnated Deirdre. It has to be an actual individual, because now we are trying to seduce Rowan, who would in fact be his daughter. So
I
hope that that man who Cortland picked, I have to, just for my own sanity, and I'm not above talking about incestuous relationships.
I mean, we spent a lot of time this summer talking about incestuous relationships on the House of the Dragon on HBO. Yep.
Yeah. And I was on the episode right after the White Lotus, where there was some implied incestuous relationships. Again, I'm not above it, but I would just love for it to not be a father-daughter situation. So I'm going to be under the assumption that Lasher is able to like get in Deirdre's head to make her sleep with this man that Cortland picks, but that it's not specifically Lasher. I would like it not to be Lasher. So just throw that out there. But I agree. I mean, it's very interesting. I watched the episode, and then as I like clicked to turn it off, I clicked the back button to get to the menu, because I'm going to watch something else. Because as I was saying to you before I start, I can't not be watching content. It was like very like clearly under Mayfair. It was like young adult content. I was like, you know what? I should put my, you know, that hat on, that I am watching more of a young adult content than maybe, you know, Interview is, I think, but also, I don't know. It didn't feel perhaps sometimes as like tropey as young adult stuff can be. And I'm not disparaging, if Kevin and Melissa are listening, I'm not disparaging young adult content. I actually really love young adult content. The thing is that I need my like expectation hat to be on properly if I'm going to watch young adult content, versus when I think I'm watching something that is perhaps, you know, a little bit more like, this was billed to me as a supernatural thriller, not a young adult supernatural thriller. But now that I sort of like see that tag, it does reframe the show for me in a way that I'm going to take that for what it is. I didn't love, you know, I think that there's interesting stuff here. I think if you put this on paper, like if I was Rich planning a D&D session and you were like, okay, there's a coven of witches, like all our players are in a coven of witches, and then there's going to be this like shape-shifting entity who you can never tell whether that's them or not. Like, that's interesting to me. So the thing for me, I thought that the funeral procession scene felt a little awkward or clumsy, I guess, in a sense. I thought that it felt very small budget TV, I guess, is I feel like that sounds disparaging, but it just felt like it just didn't really work for me. And it felt a little bit awkward with Lasher dancing around and her being seduced by him. So yeah, I'm with you that I think that the Lasher stuff is certainly the weakest of the show so far. I love Cyprian Greve. I think that it's interesting to see the like Carlotta versus Cortland stuff. I think could be very interesting, but yeah, I'm with you in terms of Lasher not maybe working.
Yeah, the funeral procession itself. So we've seen so many kind of scenes like this, right? I appreciate that it was trying to kind of pull on the very specific kind of geographic culture of New Orleans, and that was kind of interesting. But from what we understand about Rowan, she's a pretty discerning woman, right? This is a skeptical kind of woman, a woman of science. She's a little cynical and jaded and rough around the edges. And I just think you see her like walk out of the burning hotel amidst the kind of crisis of the situation that she's in already, this realization of the supernatural elements tied to her life, this death of her mother, all the kind of initial conversation that she's having with Cyprian. And she ends up in this like awkward conversation with Cyprian's sister outside that she's then like, okay, I'm going to walk to my aunt's, and gets swept up in this funeral procession in a way that I think you nailed it. It felt clunky to me. It just didn't feel like it followed through on the character. And I get what you're saying about the kind of small scale, small budget, right? Like shaky camera, lots of kind of disoriented expression acting, right? And all of that was fine given where we were. But the whole context of the situation just felt weird. And as soon as Lasher rolls up, they're so immediately kind of familiar and she's so like intimately close to him. And I know that we've already seen that this is a woman who's sort of in touch with her sexuality and is comfortable like interacting with different men or whatever, but it just felt off to me, Grace. I don't know, something about it didn't jive and did not connect in a way that I came out of it feeling like, oh, okay, there's something authentic and interesting about the connection between these two people, and I want to see more of it. That was the most probably frustrating part of the episode for me, that I came out of that like, gosh, I don't know. I'm not that excited about this element of this story, and it's pretty central given what we've seen so far. Right.
Well, to be fair, I guess part of what we're supposed to believe is that it didn't actually happen.
Fair. Yes,
it only happened in her dream.
Right.
Right. So she takes the drink. Can I tell you my experience with these, glass tube, like lab tube drinks in New Orleans?
Please do. You take them from strangers often or?
Well, so I've been to New Orleans. I went to a music festival. I went to Voodoo Fest, which takes place around Halloween each year, and about 6 or 7 years ago, we drove down, we stayed in New Orleans, stayed in a hostel, went, and yeah, most of our days were spent, but we had some time before and a little bit of time after. And so we went down to like the French District and Bourbon Street and walking around, and little innocent me was like, somebody like walks up with this thing and it's like, here you go. And I'm like, my friend and I look at it like, okay, we take the drink. And they're like, okay, like $8, please. And you're like, wait, what? Like, you just gave me a drink. And they're like, yeah, well, that's the point, that you would just like, we sell them. And I was like, yeah, but you don't have a sign that says like $8. You don't have any. And so I was very triggered by this, woman coming up and offering the drink. But this is very common down in on Bourbon Street for these, like people walking around with like test tubes, shots. Yeah. Little old me was like, that must not cost any money. They must just be giving alcohol for free. What a nice city New Orleans is.
I love the display of the test tube shots. They do look really good. All the different colors of liquid and the kind of like candy striper display on the street there. But yeah, I was very concerned for you during the telling of that story, Grace, as
No, nothing else happened. I was with a friend. We had the shots and then we paid for the drink. That's
great. Yeah. That's a great resolution. The loss of $8 is a real happy ending to that story.
16. Really?
Me
and my friends. Yeah.
You got doubled in. A strong tourist move in any kind of tourist.
Super tourist. Yeah. This is like,
where's my money? Responsible. Money. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Sorry. That was a dotted line. It was a contract, technically. Yeah. That was,
I mean, possession is 9/10 of the law, and I had already had the drink.
And you possessed that lab tube. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Well, so maybe let's start where the episode starts, which is with the flashback to the 1600s. My guess is, so this is, they come in, she's, this woman has been attacked by a boar and she's being carried home and her daughter is like trying to treat her. And this woman's like, give me this specific herb. And Susanna immediately realizes, Suzanne sort of realizes like, this will kill you. He's like, listen, your job as a midwife is not just about life. It's about death. And so, and then also she's like concerned about this idea of heaven or hell. And she's like, no, I'm just going to die. There's no heaven or hell. So for me, what I presume these flashbacks, we've had two of them so far. I actually really like them. There's a world,
me
where,
too.
Like, there's a world where like, I want this show to be set in 1600 Scotland. as we just walked, finished through, we're talking about Vikings Valhalla with our friend Bryce Isaiah. I'm like, maybe a period piece about witches. But I presume that by the end of the season, what we're going to get is sort of essentially the start of the coven. Like, I wonder if what we saw last week, it was Lasher, but that not necessarily that they have any power to stop Lasher. And so the idea might be that by the end of the season, we sort of get, how do these witches, how do the Mayfairs become witches, is my thing that then like correlates with some of the stuff that they're going to do. So to eventually try to prevent being, you know, attacked or harmed by people. That person might not even be Lasher. It might just be that like they're subject to misogyny. And so this idea that like, what if we could do something that like meant that we wouldn't have to suffer from that, and that maybe the end of like them officially becoming witches aligns with potentially how Rowan needs to get rid of Lasher. That's sort of my like parallel thinking analogy, my theory.
I love all of this. First of all, I love, just to circle back to the kind of the flashback that we got previously, the notion that this man is not Lasher and that they are just subjected to misogyny kind of left and right as women during this time period, regardless of the witch element of it all. And I'm with you. I think there's a really fun through line to track of these women finding their power and establishing their kind of community amongst one another, forming this coven, as it were. I do think the important note that we got between Cortland and Lasher this episode, this notion of the 13th witch. 13, an interesting number, an arcane number, you're often affiliated with witchcraft and all kinds of like, you know, bad luck, a number of ill omen, another thing associated with witchcraft. So I love the idea that I hooked onto there, that Lasher is kind of tracking this family across the generations and waiting for this kind of 13th generation. I had the same realization you did about Lasher and the potential parentage during last week's podcast, Grace, but I just didn't necessarily want to stop down on that as the revelation came. I'm going to just wait to put energy here until either we confirm or deny this theory. But I think you're in a pretty good perspective of when we're dealing with the shape changer, these seem to me like the kind of context clues we can use to guess that this is not Lasher and this is not Lasher, but the potion salesman and the dead mother were, right? And so I'm clocking all of that. I do think that, gosh, the element of the flashback that I really loved is the way that it's connecting to the medicine element, the healing element of witchcraft, right? And it's something we've been talking about the last 2 weeks is like, this is neat, but we want to see like witchy witchcraft stuff, not brain surgery via magic. And so reminding us the role of the witch as a healer, as an apothecary, as an herbalist, as somebody that you would take someone to after they've been dismembered by a boar. Also, Grace, it seems like there was a lot of trouble with boars back in the day. I know they have
shows deal with boar attacks. I think
we got it on Vikings Valhalla, which was calling me back to the house of the dragon of it all, as Freydis pulls a Rhaenyra and kind of does boar. It's very interesting.
And Succession, boar on the floor.
Oh yeah, boar on the floor. Lest we forget. Do you think boar on the floor originated in Scotland in the 1600s?
Yeah,
isn't that where the Roy family is from?
I believe Logan Roy is from Scotland. Yeah, I believe
Logan Roy, warlock, confirmed. Yeah, was Succession actually about witchcraft?
Are all TV shows a crossover? Yeah, so I love this stuff. I mean, it basically just made me want to watch The Witch by Robert Eggers again, mostly, which is not about Scotland, but about the forming of a coven. And
love that game, Grace. And very arbitrarily, I spent all of yesterday playing a game called Witchwoods, which is about this old witch who's waking up in her cabin when this strange black goat wanders inside. And it's got huge The Witch vibes. And I was like, oh, great. Yeah.
I do love the I love the sort of idea again to this, like, them being medicine people and healers. One of the first D&D stories I wrote was this idea of this witch who is called a witch, but that, you know, she is just very helpful, but is like sort of like it's seen as taboo, her magic. So I'm very like into the, yeah, they're actually healers, but for whatever reason, because it's magic, because it's whatever, it's turned again. I mean, to the point of her daughter being like, well, you know, what about heaven or hell? And she's being like, no, that's not, you know, I'm like neither good, I'm neither bad. And that's not like, you know, she's basically saying like, no, I'm just going to be buried in the ground. Like, it doesn't really matter. What happens with that idea of like, are you being condemned or not? So anyway, I thought that was very,
it's good. The Arthur C. Clarke quote, right? Yeah. Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic, right? And the idea of advanced herbcraft, understandings of medicine, all this stuff being like, not aligned. It definitely shares a ton of DNA with Vikings, which we were just talking about, which was fun. Did you ever watch Lost Girl, Grace? I believe this is a Canadian television show.
No.
Yeah, and you would kind of like it. I think it shares a lot of DNA with what we're talking about in the Anne Rice universe of the supernatural elements in a kind of modern day situation. And there was a character there that very much reminded me of Cyprian Greve, which is why I ask.
So we're gonna, this episode, Deirdre is dead. Rowan, good thing she can claim that she's a doctor, because why else are you like all up on the body? But she's going to, and Cyprian's going to give the name Talamasca Rich. You talked about whether the doctor might be also involved with Talamasca, but he's gonna essentially, you know, explain sort of their purpose, what they've been doing for all these years. Here's a question. She sees all of her gloves, right? And the history. He says he wears his gloves to drown out, to be able to, like, you know, create, not be drowned in memories, right? Of touching things, right?
It's a rogue X-Men situation. I need these gloves because my powers. Yeah.
But can I add, is he just constantly having flashbacks of like the gloves being created, him buying the gloves at the store?
No, it's a great question, but because of the rogue clause in supernatural powers, gloves are actually overlooked and immune. Yeah, okay. Gloves are literally the only physically created item that one can touch and not experience psychometric flashbacks.
Okay, probably special Talamasca built gloves, probably. That makes sense.
The Talamasca glove factory. They actually have like a whole time loop happening there. It's like a poop trap paradox of glove production. Yeah.
So in this episode, Cyprian's got to, he's got to go out. He's got to do an investigation. Lasher's going to light the building on fire. They're going to leave. What did you make of this Rowan and Cyprian conversation? I do feel like there's a sense that, Rowan said very wrong things in this conversation.
Yes, I agree.
Of like, she's like, no, it's not my baby. It's just, I'm like carrying it as a surrogate. It's like, well, won't the baby just for always want to know who you are? And don't you feel bad about that? She's like, I got to go to work.
I thought Rowan was absolutely terrible to Cyprian's sister of like, I'm adopted. I mean, that was like big time the energy. I'm adopted and it really traumatized me. You want to do that to another human being, you know? Like the shade that was happening there. And I really expected the sister to be indignant on a couple of different levels of like, first of all, why are you in my brother's house? Second of all, why is the pregnant sister's high heels underneath the brother's couch? That was like indicative to me of a different storytelling trope, Grace, of like, I'm not actually his sister, though I'm claiming to be. This is Cyprian Greve's baby. I was like, oh my God, what even is happening here? Like, who's lying to who? Where's the double bind? But I did feel like Rowan was unnecessarily pointed about, hello, stranger, whom I've met in your family's house minutes ago. Let me ask you very pointed questions about your choice to generate finance through pregnancy. You know, it felt deeply uncomfortable, Grace.
Mayfair taking a strong don't adopt stance.
Mayfair, anti-surrogacy. Who would have guessed? Yeah.
So this is where Rowan's going to have something to drink from the woman who we presume is Lasher. She will actually pass out, but she is going to join the procession, dance with Lasher. And yeah, does he give his name? Does he give his name? No, he calls himself Adonis.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That's a good alibi. You know, if you need one for an evening, you want to pick something that's memorable, and Adonis certainly stands out.
Yeah, so this scene is really, I guess, just to introduce, like, you know, Lasher has been watching Rowan, but to fully, you know, build a connection, at least in her brain. So, you know, there's something to this. I thought the episode was a little bit the scene was a little bit clumsy, but alas, it served its purpose for them to meet and be introduced.
And dance. Can I ask, Grace? So I realized that a funeral is supposed to be a celebration of life, certainly in the great city of New Orleans, even maybe more so in the way the kind of specific kind of rituals that they use to celebrate the life or the end of a life there and during a funeral. Would you be deeply put off if a stranger in their pajamas was dancing in one of your loved one's funeral procession down the street?
No. I do like it. You know why? It's a great story for something. Yeah, and then this woman in pajamas just started dancing in Grace's funeral procession. That's a great story for my family. And I'm all about, like, you know, I'm a big people watcher. I watch people. I'm always about what's the story. So, yeah, join in.
If you see my funeral procession
walking, but you are welcome to join in.
Get your best pair of pajamas and join right in. How do we feel about Alexander?
Yeah, actually, you should change into pajamas.
Yeah, you should be wearing pajamas. I mean, it's a story if you're wearing normal clothes, but it's a good story if you show up in your pajamas dancing. How do we feel about Alexander Daddario's dancing? Because it was good. Like not committed. I felt like she would not commit.
Which is the point. Like, that is kind of the point, right? That she's, like, reluctant to do it. But it was a lot of awkward shoulder dancing, which I am an awkward sholler dancer. Like, I could not do better than what Alexander Daddario did. But I did think it was not great.
I'm channeling huge Elaine energy. I can't lie. My dancing is volatile and erratic, Grace. If I'm dancing, everybody's going to know it. I'm sure that people are pointing. I do appreciate that there's like some deeper character metaphor there, that she's not committed. And there's a bit of reluctance even that we see in the dance moves. But I was like, gosh, just like let loose, girl. You seem like very repressed.
Yeah.
What about all the dead people as they arrive? That was the one cool moment, I thought, where Lasher's like, the dead are never far. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. This is cool New Orleans stuff, right? That the dead are like hanging out, invisibly dancing with the living, sitting in long chairs. Like, I love the dead guy sitting on top of his kind of funeral procession, waving at everybody. That was really fun.
I loved it. Yeah, I thought that was great. I thought that there is some strong stuff in this episode, because I thought that was really good. And then we're also going to get this scene with where Carlotta is talking with, and I can't remember, I don't know who this woman is.
Oh, the woman who works in the house, right? Gosh, Delphine?
No, not Delphine. There's another woman she's talking to who she's like, well, what are you going to do? And she's like, I'm going to do what we've always done, which is attack, like, you know, bind Lasher to somebody. And so poor Delphine gets given the necklace. It's like, she would have wanted you to have it. She's like, no, I can't wear it. She's like, she would have wanted, like, please put it on right now. This will just, don't worry. It definitely won't bind you to a shape-shifting entity that will ruin your life. And then just my dark brain, the stuff that I love from this was the most horror I think we've gotten so far, was Lasher making Delphine smash her head against the wall until she's dead. This is brutal and horrific and disgusting, and I loved it.
What I really appreciate, as much as we're kind of like poking fun at the way that the funeral procession was shot, that it might have looked a little thin, I love the way that they edited this, right? Yeah. As you have kind of everybody upstairs and we hear this crushing, thudding, like organic flesh into stone kind of sound. And we cut to the silhouette and it looks for a minute as though like, oh, is Lasher down there? Oh no, Delphine is doing this. Okay. And I'm thinking that she's kind of like punching through the door or trying to like smash the door down. But and then like as the sound becomes more and more grotesque, like it's telegraphing that we're going to pan around and get this really brutal shot of her head crushed and bleeding. This was visceral, Grace. And I don't know, it made me feel really conflicted emotionally because I'm not sure what to think of Delphine. Like part of me is very much pushing her towards the antagonists from those early episodes, the episode one specifically. The way she seems like so kind of dismissive of Deirdre's condition and kind of dealing with the doctor initially. But then I'm also like, Delphine seems like a very poor set upon woman that has to deal with Corlotta, who probably like I should have way more sympathy for, except like, is she in or is she out? And there's a little bit of like culpability, I think, that ties Delphine into like having her head crushed in the basement.
I don't think Delphine is as in as Carlotta is, but I do think that she must know to a degree that they were sedating a seemingly otherwise pretty normal woman. So, you know, there's that. So we get Cyprien trying to do some investigative work. He's going to be sort of boxed out of the elevator. There is he's getting static. There is no memory that he can see in the elevator. So he's going to go to the morgue and he'll touch her head. And he will see that the baby, he will see Rowan being given up. And then the morgue attendant is going to come over and be like, oh, hey, like you definitely know she's a witch too, huh? Like, yeah, here, come to our meeting. What'd you make of this? He does pocket the leaflet, even if he's like, no, you're wrong.
I like an autopsy scene, always good and stuff like this. I like the moment where he kind of like touches her and gets the flash of memories. The whole beat where he's in the elevator and everything's been kind of like scrubbed clean and we get the kind of like aha, like chalk drawing effect on the wall that you can't read. I kind of like that beat.
Me too.
But yeah, the actual like funeral worker here, the autopsy guy, just like calling him out and being like, dude, you totally touched a witch. I was like, oh my God, this guy has no chill. Somebody fire this guy. This is a bit much.
Yeah. Yeah. So I presume we will meet the group of men who are concerned about the Mayfair witches at some point. We'll get like with like coffee and tea and snacks, the meeting. Yeah,
they're all going to be like sitting playing cards somewhere in New Orleans. It's going to be some kind of jazz music in the background, a bunch of suits, old white guys. You could see.
It gives me much more like full on, like, you know, not suits. Like the thing I'm giving is like full on, like, you know, conspiracy theory under, you know, someone who lives in their mom's
Charlie Day yarn thumbtacks on the cork board. Yeah,
and like in somebody's like mom's basement, like you know, at the media.
Nope. So I think this is an interesting pin for us to put in, though. You're going with like the full-on tinfoil conspiracy theory.
I'm going comedy dwellers. I'm going comedy route, I think.
I'm gonna go with the like, you know, the high-end, like, you know, glass towers and skyscrapers, kind of like power brokers behind closed doors hunting witches.
So we get Rowan to reaches the Mayfair house, but she realizes that as her mom comes out and is talking to her, that this can't possibly be her mom. So she will run away and then she will wake up exactly where she was right after she took the drink. And so she heads back to Cyprien's house where they sort of fill each other in. And he tells her that, like, yeah, Deirdre never wanted to give you up, and losing you caused her great heartbreak. And that, he does say he saw a man enter the elevator with Deirdre before she died. So like the elevator was sort of like, you know, protected, but he could see, who went in. So the question is, Rich, who do you think the man is? Because I think it seems like, well, it's Lasher. My bet would be that it's, do we see, I can't remember, we didn't see it, right? So my bet is that it's like Cortland.
Gosh, interesting. It's so interesting because I'm tracking a bunch of pieces here, right? We talked a bit about Cortland and like the framing as he inherently has to be kind of like antagonistic towards Carlotta. And we get a little bit more of that this episode of Carlotta saying like, oh, that man would eat you up if he got his hands on you, but I will like keep you safe. I'm going to keep you away from him. And then the Cortland Lasher interaction, which leads us to a place of like, there's clear fear, right? Cortland is afraid of Lasher. And then he's playing it as though like, oh, oh, my condolences. You must be heartbroken that Deirdre is gone. But that felt very transparent to me and very mm-hmm. much like a platitude, you know, that he's just offering in the moment, like knowing how kind of false and hollow it is. I'm pretty much still sold on like Lasher had to have killed her, didn't he? Or like some invisible force, some magical entity. And maybe there is a little bit of a misdirect happening here where we have more than one kind of big bad that we're playing with. But gosh, I don't know. I don't think Cortland could have, because Carlotta's kind of, or rather Cyprian is noting to Rowan, your uncle never had any power. According to what I know, your uncle never had any magic. So maybe that's the actual red herring, is that we're supposed to think Cortland is like powerless outside of the normal, like kind of, you know, bounds of power and money and prestige and influence, but that in fact he does have some magic of his own. I don't know.
I talked about this last week of like, what does Cortland get out of some agreement with Lasher, which, you know, could be magic. In my head, it was sort of like immortality, wealth, potentially, like, right. He's a very wealthy man.
Creature comforts. Yep.
But I guess it could be some form of magic. I mean, so then there's this thing about like the 13th witch, right? And in so the other piece here is like, why does anybody need Deirdre dead, which is presumably the biggest reason to keep, because we saw last week that like Deirdre's willing to just put the necklace back on, right? She's just willing to like to go back to Lasher. So who, for Lasher, what does that mean? I guess the idea that like Rowan being, they also talk about Rowan being much more, she's not going to go along as much as maybe some other people would. I think Cortland says this, right? And so what is, so presumably my understanding of that, like Lasher attaches himself to a Mayfair witch because they are powerful witches and therefore it makes him stronger, which then therefore would make Cortland stronger, if my theory of like they're connected and Cortland's getting something out of it. So the idea that Deirdre dies is potentially just because they think that she's the most, you know, able to be convinced by Carlotta to be basically like, she ends up being sedated for like 30 years, right? So she's the most vulnerable to not be able to use her powers because she's the most sort of, she's much more of a pushover than what they're seeing in Rowan, who I guess the idea here is that like, if you can convince Rowan that like together we will rule the world and she's not going to be able to be stopped by anybody else, this is the avenue. Kill Deirdre because she won't give the necklace up because she's so attached, and get Rowan to put it on. Which I will say in a future episode, we'll absolutely see Rowan wearing the necklace.
Oh, no question. I think that you're clocking a bunch of interesting things here. I imagine that there is some kind of generational power, that the notion of this 13th witch, there's some kind of prophecy, illusion, something like that, that Rowan is going to fulfill or unlock, right? She is this promised kind of goddess to an extent. I've been doing a lot of homework, Grace. Folks talk a lot about the hero's journey. Joseph Campbell, hugely popularized by George Lucas and Star Wars, but I've been talking a lot about the heroine's journey in recent weeks because of the coverage that we were doing for Willow, and John Kasdan was bringing these female characters really to the forefront. He was using a lot of the kind of mythic story tropes that are associated with a heroine's journey, amongst which one of the tools that he used is this notion of kind of conquering your shade, your shadow, right? The dark half inside of you, the half of you that desires and wants and is willing to kind of look past your moral compunctions to receive that which you perceive as due, right? And so I think that we're very much like playing on that element, right? The notion that even Lasher is saying, right? Like, she's different. She's closed off to me. And I think this idea that she's like powerful enough to resist me more so than anyone that we've met before. But at the point that she kind of joins in and is willing to stand beside me, she's more powerful than any who've come before and will unlock kind of limitless potential for what the future may hold. Also, just retrospect, really bad look on Carlotta to be like, hey, Delphine, put this necklace on, but then I'm going to send you into the basement where you could easily kill yourself rather than drug you with Thorazine like I did for my niece for decades. You got to think there's some Thorazine left, but she does need that doctor approval.
The doctor
note.
Yeah.
Bad call.
Yeah. I thought it makes me wonder, like, how does, like, Delphine seemingly is not a Mayfair. So how, why does Carlotta think that this will work to Bynes? So, like, she must
might
be
just
out.
Be anyone who puts the necklace on, or any woman who puts the necklace on, could be bound. Just Delphine just doesn't have witch powers, right?
But Carlotta must know that, like, the I guess in my head, I thought Carlotta maybe knew more than she actually does, which is that just putting it on some random person will just cause Lasher to be like, no, thank you. I will not be taking this one. I would like a return, actually. So Carlotta clearly, like, doesn't know as much as maybe I presumed that she did, I guess is my point there. Yeah, I just want to flag one thing. We do get a shot of Jen Richards, who I am a big fan of, a trans actress, who she is when Rowan goes to watch the funeral procession. She turns and there's this woman in sort of like a sparkly sequin dress who they kind of make eye contact with. And then this woman walks off. That's Jen Richards, who is billed as a recurring character in the show. So that just happens. I was like, yay, Jen. And then the scene happens that completely blanked my mind. And I was like, oh no, this was all bad. Maybe Jen Richards, maybe that's the extent of her appearance in the show. She's like, actually, no, I would like to not be in this scene. no, thank you. But we did get a glimpse of her. So hopefully she will show up. If that's the extent of the Jen Richards we get in the show, I'm going to be very upset. Just wanted to flag that.
Very is there cool.
Yeah. Anything else from this episode, Rich? Second line?
No, nothing really that stands out to me. Like I said, the stuff that I really loved is the allusions, the way that we're kind of connecting this modern story to the traditional witchy tropes of the healer and the kind of misunderstood, the like forceful woman. I like that. I'm really excited about more Talamasca stuff. I'm curious to see what next week looks like. Yep.
Yeah, same. Next week's episode is called Curiouser and Curiouser. I don't know these words. Curiouser. Curiouser and Curiouser?
Curiouser and Curiouser. Yes, I think that we're touching on the Alice in Wonderland illusion of Curiouser and Curiouser, and they're words that you know so well that you did not even recognize them when you tried to read them.
Wow, curious that I didn't know those words. Yeah,
curious indeed. I think, ironically, I think the show is a little bit better at piquing my curiosity than it is sating it so far.
I would agree.
It's a better job, like, posing the questions than answering the questions. That's my estimation three episodes in.
I mean, to the extent that Mayfair Witches is a friggin' long book, that I bought it and was like, I can't read this. This is 1,000 pages. I wonder, I often say that sometimes premieres, like the season premiere, is a really tough task and can often feel like it's so set up that it's like, okay, everything else will be better. And I wonder if this is the instance of sort of the beginning of this show, like to get to the stuff that they would be really excited for, you have to do some of this stuff first. And that, and so that maybe this is a show. I would be delighted to learn this, that really kicks into gear later on. We just did a show, Vikings Valhalla. We did our coverage with Bryce. And that was a show, although in its second season, that I thought was pretty slow and then had a really good, like, episode 7 and 8. So if that's what this, show is doing, and that, because you have to do sort of all of this to get to where you're going, then maybe that's what, the show is. It's a very risky proposition in the year 2023 when shows get canceled on basically nothing. So I don't know what the ratings are. It looks like the first two did about 500,000 viewers. Seems to be not bad. I don't know exactly where that data comes from, but I'm just on the Wikipedia page. But interesting.
I'm just saying things. I don't know how strong that is for a cable premiered show in 2023. I do think that to the curiouser and curiouser of it all, that's an explicit Alice in Wonderland quote, and we're about to maybe go down the rabbit hole. So I would hope for things to maybe engage as we come into the next episode in terms of curiouser and curiouser. Let's go down the rabbit hole. Let's see. Let's like get Rowan into the weirdness of all of this now in episode 4. I'm ready for it.
Well, if folks want to dive into a different rabbit hole, Rich, what else do you got going on and where can people find you?
Oh, gosh, so much stuff, Grace. We just did talk about Vikings Valhalla with Bryce, mm-hmm. which was very fun. You and I and Ariel are getting together every week to talk about Dark, going back to Vinden for a rewatch project. I keep talking about it. I'm going to. If you're liking Mayfair Witches, go watch Willow if you haven't seen it. A really powerful story of a heroine's journey, a bunch of really cool LGBT female-led characters. Very cool stuff going on there. Mike Bloom and myself are talking about The Legend of Vox Machina. Is back, number one show on Amazon. Yeah, it's been a big release. The first three episodes are out. Mike and I sat down and talked about all of that. And of course, I'm streaming Dungeons and Dragons and occasionally other tabletop role-playing games over at twitch.tv/DMPhilly. You can find me on Twitter at DMPhilly. My DMs are open if you want to hit me up about any of that stuff. That's me, Grace.
Cool. I'm also covering another Sunday night show, HBO's The Last of Us. And so Mike Bloom and I do the recap each Sunday. Tara and I get together on Mondays to talk about the show from the lens of people who've played the video game for Video Game Club. So check those out. Ariel and I cover movies each week on Post Show Recaps Theater. And over on Rob as a Podcast, I have RHAP Game Night. We recently played Ticket to Ride. It was very fun. You can catch the YouTube and Twitch replays over there on the RHAP Twitch and RHAP YouTube. Omer, Chappelle, Rob Cicerino, and Asia Welch join me to play that. And we'll have another game in February. I'm on Twitter at HiFromGrace for anything else I'm doing, which I have plenty of guest appearances next week. My schedule a bit booked up. I'm very excited. Crime Scene, the Wrestling Rehab Up, and I'm going to appear over Silent Podcast talking about Taskmaster. So lots of podcasting from me. If you're interested, we'll be back next week with episode 4 coverage of Mayfair Witches. Until next time, double, double, toil and trouble.